and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at.
This is not behavior intended to keep anyone safe. It's intended to intimidate and harass.
Advocates are sounding the alarm, saying federal immigration agents have been spotted at multiple Cook County courthouses.
This project doesn't just make history, it corrects it.
It's been decades in the making. The CTA finally breaks ground on the Red Line Extension Project. A look at the potential impact for Southside residents.
It's much faster to get a gun than it is to get a mental health appointment.
There's a crisis with black youth and suicide. We talk with Chicagoans taking action. And it's open mic night on Chicago's rooftops as acoustic devices are listening for migrating birds. First off tonight, federal immigration agents are reportedly spotted at four Cook County courthouses this morning. Immigrant advocates are calling it a significant ramp up of enforcement in and around Chicago.
Just seeing ICE at one courthouse may not be so significant in itself, but seeing ICE presence at four courthouses all in the same morning looks like an escalation.
The Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights say ICE agents were at the domestic violence courthouse downtown, as well as at other courts at 111th Street, Grand and Central, and in Maywood. Last fall, then Chief Judge Tim Evans signed an order banning federal agents from arresting people in or around local courthouses without a warrant. And in December, Governor J.B. Pritzker signed a law barring the civil arrest of anyone in or around courthouses who are attending certain court proceedings. The Department of Homeland Security, which oversees ICE, did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Mourners paid their respects today to slain police officer John Bartholomew. Visitation continues through 8 tonight at St. Andrew's Greek Orthodox Church in Edgewater. Funeral services are scheduled for tomorrow morning at 10 at the same church. The 10-year police force veteran was shot and killed April 25th inside Endeavor Health Swedish Hospital on the north side while escorting a man suspected of armed robbery to the hospital for treatment. Bartholomew is survived by his wife and three children. Advocates are calling on the Trump administration to restore crisis services for LGBTQ plus youth through the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. People in crisis could receive help by dialing 988 and using the Press 3 option. That is until the Department of Health and Human Services discontinued that option last summer.
That outcomes of LGBTQ young people who are seeking support in some of their most darkest, fearful hours, a life could be saved based off of the individual who answers on the other end.
The National Alliance on Mental Illness, or NAMI, Chicago, gave a tour of its 988 call center today to Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy. The organization says it's fielded more than 53,000 calls since opening in January 2024. Advocates argue the sudden termination impacted more than 1.5 million young people nationwide. They're calling on Congress to pass the 988 LGBTQ plus Youth Access Act to restore the service. At the time, the Trump administration said it was canceling the option to, quote, focus on serving all help seekers, including those previously served through the Press 3 option. Up next, plans to extend the CTA Red Line are now in motion. More on the multi-billion dollar project right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Plans to extend the CTA Red Line to the far south side of Chicago are finally on track. The Red Line Extension Project broke ground last month after years of planning and months of federal funding uncertainty. The project would add over 5.5 miles of tracks and four new stations. Planned stations would be at 103rd Street, 111th Street, Michigan Avenue at 115th and 130th Street. Joining us are Tanisha Marshall, the CTA's Vice President of the Red Line Extension Project, Katanya Raby, Vice President of Planning at the Far South Community Development Corporation and Chair of the CTA Citizens Advisory Board, and Alderman Anthony Beal, whose 9th Ward includes two of the future Red Line stations. Thanks to all of you for joining us. Congrats on getting this far. Yes. I'm sure it has been a long road.
Yes.
Tanisha, let's start with you. How long has it been in the works?
So this started with CTA over 20 years ago. We started our planning and development in 2006, but even it predates that because in 2004, actually the community rallied around and did a referendum to even get this, to make this even possible. So this project has been in the works for nearly 60 years. So we're super excited to be at this place today.
Yeah, tell us about that community referendum in 2004.
Yes.
And how it got us to this point.
Because of the community and also legislative support, they were able to get enough signatures in order to get it on the books for the CTA to take notice and also be able to start to plan for that work. So in 2006, that's when we started planning for it. We started our NEPA, which is National Environmental Protection Agency, and we also started coordination with the federal government in order to start this process.
And then there's been some concerns over federal funding over the last few years. Remind us what's been going on there.
So if you remember, in January of 2025, we got an executed full funding grant agreement. Long time coming. We finally got it. Super excited about that. And then later in the year, there was a federal pause on that funding. But just recently, it was actually lifted. So the money is back flowing. And that's how we were able to have that great and fantastic groundbreaking.
Right. And that federal pause was because of the Trump administration's concerns about some of the contracting. But recently, a judge has said, nope, you got to give them the money.
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, there's some federal policies behind that.
Yes, yeah. And then there's the timeline for completing the project.
Yeah.
What does that look like?
So because we just did break ground, you'll see them digging some infrastructure there. You'll also see some caissons and foundation work because basically we're building from the ground up. And from there, you'll see the caissons and the structures. And then we'll have track and systems along the way. Then you'll see the stations that'll start up in about 27, 28, and then we will go into testing and commission in 2030, and that's when we'll open up revenue service and new tracks and new stations in 2030.
Four short years.
Yes, four short years, but it's all new construction.
Yes, yeah, there's a lot to do. Katanya, you were at the groundbreaking ceremony. We're looking at a little bit of it now. What was it like finally being there for that?
Oh, it was amazing. Absolutely beautiful. The energy, just everyone in the community coming out. So much of our community leadership, just, elected officials, just everyone in that space overjoyed by having this momentous occasion being celebrated. We're so excited.
Alderman Beal, what does this extension mean for residents in your ward?
Well, when you look at everything that we've done over the last 25 years, we've been fighting for the Red Line Extension. Even when I was chairman of transportation, the Committee on Transportation, me, Alderman Austin at the time, and also Alderman Brookins approached Mayor Daley and asked him to put this on the federal agenda. And it was because of those actions, working with the community, that, the Mayor Daley fulfilled his father's promise to the Far South Side, because his father is the one that actually made the promise 50 years ago that we would extend the Red Line Extension. So we approached him and said, look, your father promised us this, and so we need you, because of the pressure that the community put on us and the pressure that we put on him. He is the one that basically put it on the forefront of the federal agenda for the city of Chicago.
Right. And so it's finally getting done, and this means your residents will have access to... Go on. Finish that sentence.
Well, we have access to get to those jobs downtown, to be able to get from the Far South Side of the city of Chicago to downtown in 30 minutes is nothing short of amazing, because we've been locked out. It would take us, sometimes an hour and a half, 2 hours to get from 138th Street just to get downtown. And, time is money. And so to be able to get on a train, get downtown in 30 minutes, that's more time we can spend with our family. That's more time we can, go to dinner and do different things that really other families take for granted, other than, being on public transportation. And so it's going to have a huge impact. And then all the dollars that come along with that, to actually have four stops on the South Side is going to bring more transit-oriented development. We're going to bring some more stores and shops to surround a lot of these stations, and it's going to have a ripple effect. You know, we've been talking about what's happening in Roseland. Well, you can see what's happening in Roseland, the largest infrastructure project the CTA has ever undertaken.
Catania, you know, there's, you know, as we just heard from the alderman, there's the ability to get downtown for, you know, the jobs that are downtown more easily. But what can CTA connectivity bring to the neighborhood?
Oh, we're so excited. Far South CDC, in partnership with other local organizations, including Chicago Neighborhood Initiatives, we're, you know, pushing for the development at 115th and Michigan, which is, we lovingly call 115 Michigan, which is adjacent to the station there. And at that particular site, we are looking to bring grocery. We are looking to bring, it's a multi-family housing development. We're looking to bring other types of retail. So we expect that at, you know, at that station, along with the other stations, there will be a variety of different shops and restaurants and other kinds of places that residents can pop into, and then also attract people from other areas of the city to come and visit the Far South Side in ways that they hadn't before.
Tanashia, how has the CTA involved community members in the project?
So we actually created a PAC, which is the Project Advisory Council. We started with them back in 2019. We have key players like Cheryl Johnson, Andrea Reed, and Deborah Truss. And it's about a group of 20 people that live, work, breathe the whole neighborhood, the community, and they're able to bring back information from the community to make sure that we are aligned, to make sure that we are providing what the community really wants out there.
Alderman Beal, for anyone who visits your ward for the first time, because they will have this access via the Red Line, what can they expect, mm-hmm. and what do you want them to know?
Well, first of all, you know, what I expect is for them to see a different Ninth Ward, a different Roseland Pullman community, which they already see right now. When you drive down the Bishop Ford Expressway, you can see our ward is already being transformed before our eyes. And so now they've been asking, what are we doing on the west side of Pullman? Well, now you'll see, you know, we're working with Roseland Hospital in the medical district. This is going to help that. This is going to help us bring more resources and more jobs and opportunity into the area as well. And so we've already invested over $2 billion of public-private investment and created over 2,000 jobs, you know, as far as what you see today. And having the Red Line extension bring in $5.7 billion additional dollars, and you know, you're talking about thousands and thousands of more jobs. We need some place for all those workers to eat, have lunch, and bring their families. And then let's not forget, we have the Pullman National Monument. We have historic sites that people can come and see. We just broke ground on the Hotel Florence, where we're making that into a new boutique hotel. We have another hotel that's breaking ground this summer. So we have a lot of great things that are happening. The Far South Side is on the move. And if you haven't seen it, you need to pay attention, because it's the fastest growing African-American ward in the city of Chicago.
Tanashia, the anticipated costs, though, of this project have risen from $3.6 billion in 2024 to $5.7 billion. What is driving that?
So if you remember, we had an unprecedented effort here during the COVID?
Heard
the
about
pandemic,
it.
Right? So in 2020, that's when the pandemic hit. So back then, when it was $3.6 billion, that predates the whole pandemic episode that we all went through. So after that, everything increased, from labor to material to equipment, and so we had to adjust with those numbers. Even today, we're still living off of, you know, what happened during that pandemic.
Okay. Catania, most of this project covers Roseland, as we've discussed, but it also extends to Altgeld Gardens. Why is that connection important?
Oh, deeply important. Altgeld has been a community, as Alderman Beal mentioned, that has been very much disconnected from the rest of the city for its entire existence in terms of transit access. And so being able to really make sure that this community, you know, not only is feels like they're fully embraced and connected to the rest of the city of Chicago, it's important to make sure that they have access essentially to the rest of the world. You know, through the CTA, all Chicagoans have the benefit of being able to connect to anywhere in the world. We can get to O'Hare, we can get to Midway. Mm-hmm. And so now the residents of Altgeld Gardens will be able to do the same.
All right, that's where we're gonna, I think that's a good place to leave it, everybody. Alderman Anthony Beal, Catania Raby, and Tanashia Marshall, thanks to all of you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Up next, how local community members are helping fix the mental health crisis among Black youth. Suicide is the second leading cause of death among children and young adults in the U.S. That's according to the CDC. And in Chicago, suicide rates among Black youth are rising faster than any other racial or ethnic group. As part of Mental Health Awareness Month and in partnership with students from Northwestern University's Medill School of Journalism, we take a look at what's happening in Chicago and how two organizations are working to address this.
I know that when I was a kid, I thought about suicide a lot. When I was out committing crimes, when I was doing drugs, I thought about suicide, and I know what got me over it. So that's my role to kids. I know what helped me.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
I am a social worker, but I am the founder of Soul Survivors of Chicago. It's a nonprofit organization dedicated to suicide prevention, mental health, and awareness. I lost my son by way of suicide. His name was Jamal. He was 19 years old, and it was the worst day of my life.
The name of the foundation is House of Hope Foundation. No Kids Dying to Shy is more of a platform that we live by. We have 200 kids in our program. Every day we provide service to 40 and 50 kids. This is a safe haven where we have video games in here. We feed the kids, get their hair cut. We also teach them the curriculum as far as how to stay out of trouble, gangs, things like that.
I wanted to take what everybody says, you get this pain and turn it into something that's productive, that's about purpose, that's about spreading a message, because my son died, and he didn't have to die.
In Chicago, what we've seen is there's been a big increase in suicide deaths since 2018. For Black youth, the percentage who are attempting is much higher compared to other folks.
One of the main reasons kids in these communities commit suicide is their environment. They have nothing to look forward to. And they ask him, you know, why you can't focus in school? And he's saying, you know, I just saw somebody get killed, or haven't ate in 2 days. Or the grandmother is on hospice. When you guys say suicide, you got to look at like far as the word suicide. It's more broader than what people think. If a kid is 15 years old and he's doing 6 or 7 Percocets a day, that's like self-suicide. Anytime a 15-year-old young man get a gun, put on a mask, and when the police come, he shoots at the police back and forth, in his mind, he know there's a 99% of a chance he's going to die.
So what does the lock do?
This is a gun lock. So if you know somebody with a gun,
I do.
Please take one.
Okay.
Or take two, if you know two people with a gun. And if they know somebody, take three. Illinois has some of the most restrictive gun laws. But at the same time, we're learning that persons who have died by way of suicide, especially males, are more likely to die behind a lethal weapon like a gun. It's much faster to get a gun than it is to get a mental health appointment.
They know where the neighborhood, people is hiding guns in the community. Daddy got a gun sitting on top of the shelf that's not safe, and they ain't got the lock on it, it's not in the case.
Black youth, historically, for understandable reasons, do not trust the mental health care system, the historically white mental health care system.
To have a resource that is something that is dependable, accessible, something that's known, something that is reachable, is everything. Just like food, just like water, just like fresh air.
Are we providing culturally relevant services where people are and in a format that makes sense to them?
Being in the community brings the message that you don't have to travel far to get the supports that you need. We can come and we can be right here within a block away.
One of the most important parts of suicide prevention is helping people build lives worth living, and communities to make sure that they're creating a world that kids want to live in.
I felt the need for at-risk young Black kids that needed help, but needed the right help, needed the right guidance and the right positive motivation from people that look like them.
We do what's called a circle, where I have all the kids, put all the circles together, and we just talk about everyday life, their mental, their struggles, what they're going through, ups and downs. Then we proceed over, I tell them put their clothes on. Well, they come over here, grab a vest.
Put y'all jackets on, put the vest on.
They grab a stick, put a helmet on, put on gloves, and then we bring them out. My kid come out every day and they see
just drugs and gangs and poverty, what does that do to them? And we have these kids clean community because we realize that a kid that sees a clean community makes a clean heart and a clean soul and a positive mind.
But there's this myth that if you ask somebody if they're having thoughts of suicide, you can put the idea into their head. And what we know from research and sort of just general clinical experiences, that's not true.
Most of our children speak about the anxieties they feel, the stressors of going to the next level in their lives, making sure that they can connect with you and that you at one point in your time in your life, you felt that kind of way and you were going through that, so you can normalize that conversation.
You can't judge them. You can't talk against them. You have to talk to them. If you care for these kids, they could change. You can't save them all, but if you care, you're going to change somebody because it's love, you know? It's just love.
Since this story was produced, new data has been released. That information provided at the end of April by the CDC shows that nationally, suicide rates for youth and young adults age 15 to 34 decreased by 4% from 2023 to 2024. The latest year statistics are available. We're back with more right after this.
Reflecting the people and perspectives that make up our communities, this story is part of Chicago Tonight. Black voices.
Hundreds of millions of birds migrate over Chicago every spring and fall. But most of that activity happens at night, making it nearly impossible for researchers to eyeball which bird species are passing through and how they're using the city's airspace. So, scientists from the University of Illinois are partnering with Chicago's Windy City Bird Lab to track and identify the birds by their sounds instead. Our Patty Wetley joins us now to tell us more, Patty. So these researchers, they put up around 45 to 50 acoustic monitors across the city, even in the burbs. Tell us about their project.
Even on the 111th floor of Sears
all
Tower.
All the way up there because the birds are there.
Yes.
Tell us about that project and what are the questions they're trying to answer.
Right. So like you mentioned, they can't see the birds because most of them are nocturnal, migrating at night. They can hear them, and they've used machine learning to be able to identify those sounds down to the species. So what they want to know are what species are passing through Chicago, not necessarily landing here, but they're using our airspace, and they have discovered some rarities that we don't really see around here, but they're actually flying over. And then it's really like, where are they? Are they using certain corridors more than others? But really the acoustic monitoring helps them get that species level detail that they're not able to with other technology.
That's impressive. Because they've also been using other methods like thermal imagery to study these birds.
Yes.
Tell us how that works.
Yeah, they're also able to use radar, which gives you kind of a larger landscape view of like when birds are moving. Thermal imagery will give them a picture of like the altitude that they're flying at and the direction that they're doing and more of their behavior so that they can tell, are birds like flying in unusual patterns that might indicate that they're disoriented? Maybe they're circling, you know, are bright lights in the city or is wind driving them toward the lake or toward more toward inland? They can put all of this information together into a more complete picture, like you said, of using the airspace. If you think of the airspace as a habitat just as much as the ground is. So how are they using that habitat?
And then how do they want to use all this data that they're gathering?
Well, you could be able to tell, are there changes over time of when they're arriving? Are they flying lower? Are they flying higher? If they're using certain corridors and, oh, that's where we were planning on putting an airport. Maybe not. Or, oh, they're suddenly over here where we happened to do a habitat restoration shows that it's working. It just gives them, you know, migration, there's still so much mystery surrounding it, and it will help them answer so many of the questions that we have, and also how to make the city safer for these birds as they're flying through, because as we know, Chicago is quite dangerous for migrating birds.
It is. An architectural exhibit, though, set to open on June 1st that will highlight the dangers birds face in urban Chicago. Tell us about that exhibit.
Yeah, this will be at the Chicago Architecture Center, which is on the ground floor of Illinois Center, which is where I went up to the roof where they were installing one of these monitors. And Jeannie Gang's architecture practice, Studio Gang, is curating one of two exhibits. And it's really laying out, here's the problem that our built environment has, but we have this buffet of solutions that we can use that maybe we're not using. And here are some of the materials that you can use, all the way from architects like Jeannie Yang designing skyscrapers to you and I at home to make our windows safer for birds as they fly through.
Right. I have the window clings on my windows, too.
Good for you.
Thank you very much. All right. Patty Whetley, thank you so much.
Appreciate Thanks, Brandis.
It, of course. And you can read Patty's full story on our website or check out our Instagram at WTTW Chicago. And that's our show for this Thursday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 7 for The Week in Review. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that serves the needs of clients in the Chicago area and throughout the nation.